The Ticket.
Podcasts are brought to you in part by Lewis Jewelers, the official jeweler of The Ticket and proud partner of Michigan Athletics.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. The NBA playoffs are all the rage, and at least for some of us. And we just witnessed an epic collapse. An epic collapse, not by the Brooklyn Nets. You can explain. What happened to the injuries happened to the Brooklyn Nets? Now, KD did about all he could do. As Ira pointed out, if the man just wore his shoe size, they might be advancing right now. Right? As unbelievable shot he hit to extend the game. Just couldn't, when it was time for an encore, he couldn't deliver. And the man had 49 points. Give me a break. So.
Yeah, probably not on him, Sam.
Yeah, not on him at all. You know, injuries did them in. No such excuse for the Philadelphia 76ers because their injured star still played like a star. Joel Embiid was outstanding. Man did everything he could do. But if you're in a series and you blow a 26-point lead and you blow an 18-point lead in back-to-back games and lose, Mr. Weintraub, good portion of that is on the players. I'd argue most of it's on the players. But if you squander leads that significant in back-to-back games, it's hard not to look at coaching, even from a veteran coach like Doc Rivers. If you can't hold on 18-point leads, 18 or more in back-to-back games, and you blow them both, and then you lose the series to a team that was below 500. They changed their coach. They were below 500. Nate McMillan, I asked you earlier this morning, has there ever been a guy who took over in season, not before the season? You know, because the ESPN is talking about, yeah, he's like the seventh coach, I think they said, to take over a team. And in that year, you know, they go to the Eastern Conference Finals. But he brings out like Tyronn Lue, who inherited LeBron James, and Paul Westhead, who had Magic, right? Pat Riley, who had Magic and Kareem. Give me a break, dude. I mean, or Pat Riley, who had Dwayne Wade and Shaq. That's not the same. That's not the same as this. You know, inheriting what he inherited, what Nate McMillan inherited in Atlanta. A fantastic coaching job. That being said, they had no business winning this series. They had no business winning this series. Not because they aren't a good team. Not because they don't have a young budding superstar in Trae Young. But because they were down 18 points in back-to-back games. And Ira, you got to win one of those games, right? If you're Philly. And if you don't win one of those games, you got to look at Doc Rivers. This is not just some... You know, every coach is going to have some mistakes. Every coach is going to have some blame they can handle. You don't put all the fault on a coach for if you lose a series. But this one, I think you have to put mostly on him for two reasons. Number one, you had huge leads squandered in those games. And then number two, he says Ben Simmons is giving him exactly what the team needs. They don't need any more from Ben Simmons. This is the Ben Simmons that is the perfect. He is giving them the perfect mix of what they have to have from him.
Then he's got to go because he's either lying like crazy or he believes some nonsense that he shouldn't be believing.
Try to figure it out. So I would skew towards. I would skew towards, you know what, set the Ben Simmons thing aside. Maybe this is what they as a franchise see in Ben Simmons. You know, last night, what was it, four or five points and 13 assists? I mean, those assist numbers, those rebound numbers, he fills the stat sheet in multiple ways. Okay, that's fine. You got to figure out a way not to blow a 26-point lead. And an 18-point lead. One of them, fine, you know. Squandered leads happen. All right, so you blow a big lead in one game. But two of them. I'm not surprised that Atlanta came back after that. So, hey, man, Doc Rivers, there have been some people who said, hey, he was claiming that, you know, the players were the problem in L.A. Well, you can't see me sort of tilting my head a little bit. I don't know, Doc. I don't know. Seems to me this time around, with that kind of huge letdown, this is what you call an epic collapse. I don't know what the Hawks record was when Nate McMillan took over for Pierce, but they were below 500. I mean, he wouldn't have got fired. They were below 500. And here you are taking out the team that some people said was, if not win at all, they were at least going to make the finals. And the Hawks just took them down.
So, Sam, you want to do the math? Yeah, I'll do the math for you. 41 minus, talking is terrible radio. They're 27-11 under McMillan. They were 41-31 overall. So they had 20 losses and what? They were 13-20, I think, right? That makes sense? Yeah. 14-20.
When he got fired.
There's my rough math very quickly. 14-20, and he's got him in the finals. And I would venture guess and say that the average sport fan does not know very many members of the Atlanta Hawks.
Man, you need to – hey, listen. To me, this is an example of what sage leadership can do for a team with a young, budding superstar like Trae Young. Just a little direction, a little belief, a little focus, a little perspective. He's able to have them on the right track. And this was a guy who was supposed to just be a stopgap. Like, who thought Nate McMillan took over and was going to be, you know, was going to be the guy?
Yeah, he was an interim guy. He was an interim guy.
Interim guy. That's all he was. But you're right. I mean, most people would say Trae Young, Clint Capella.
I mean, I know Kevin Herter because
you would say Kevin Herter, right? Yeah.
But so here's a question that kind of ties in with both of these teams. Because one of the biggest differences between these two teams is that one of the team's point guard can take over a game and flat out dominate and do everything on the floor. And the other team has a point guard that has holes in his game that cannot be masked.
Here's a key difference. Because, you know, in talking about Trae Young, let's be clear. Trae Young couldn't throw it in the ocean last night.
Right, but he can still he gets to the basket. He gets to the free throw line. Right. So here's the question that I ask, because part of this is a mentality thing, right? To be aggressive, but maybe if you're a better shooter, you want to be more aggressive. Ben Simmons is a professional athlete, right? Now, COVID notwithstanding, the year has been thrown out of whack. But in a normal year, he is playing basketball October through May, give or take, which means you have June, July, August, and September. Why is he not in a gym every day shooting three-pointers and free throws for 8 hours a day? He's making millions of dollars. It's his job. Why would he not be doing it? Like, you can't just concede, I'm a bad shooter, if you're a guard of the NBA. Like, you're supposed to be one of the leaders. How do you just – it's a concession. I'm a sieve when it comes to scoring the ball. You need to be able to put the – fine, you can't shoot threes. Shoot 80% from the line and attack the rim. How do you not practice that 8 hours a day for 4 months?
I don't know what's a worse stat. That he took 4 shots total or that he was 1-for-2 from the free throw line. I mean, both of those are indicative of a guy who just lacked aggression. I mean, he just did not attack at all. And say what you want about Trae Young. Yes, like I said, he couldn't throw it in the ocean. He took 11 foul shots. He was at least aggressive. I mean, I don't know how you play 36 minutes and take 4 shots if you're him. And 1 trip to the free throw line. How does that equate with superstar status? Or, you know, burgeoning superstar?
Yeah, or lead your team to the final conference final status. There are holes in his game that he doesn't need to mask them. He can overcome them. Like, to me, unless he's just not an aggressive player, in which case there's some really bad scouting when the draft happened back a few years ago. That's the first part of it. But, you know, Sam, I give a pass. I understand guys like you know, guys like Shaq have these huge hands and can't get a grip on a ball for a free throw, so it makes shooting free throws very difficult for them. And I understand that it makes it very challenging. And I don't give a total pass for not trying to be better at it. But if you're a guard in basketball, if you play 7 or 8 months of the year and you're off 4 or 5 months of the year, in those off months, how many millions of dollars is he making? Like, does he not take pride? Like, and I'm not trying to like totally dog him, because he's not the only person in the league that probably fits this category about a major hole in his game that you could just spend the offseason working on. You make millions of dollars to help lead your team. Why are you not working on that in the offseason? You're great. I'm not saying don't take some family time and all that other stuff, but you have a lot of time in a 4 or 5 month window to go to the gym every day. Go find yourself a John Beilein shooting guru, right? There are shooting gurus out there that can teach you how to fix your shot. You make millions of dollars. You can afford one of those for a couple of months in the summer and be a better shooter. And all of a sudden, you're now a 35% three-point shooter and a 70% free throw shooter. That's the difference for your team. Now, the second part is the aggressiveness. But I'm under the impression that if he was a 35 or so percent three-point shooter and he was a 70% free throw shooter, he would just be more aggressive anyway, because he would be able to turn that in and capitalize on it more.
Well, you're absolutely right that he needs to invest. Don't concede that you just can't shoot, right? I mean, you got to improve that part of your game. I look at Giannis. Giannis is not – he is far from even a good three-point shooter. He's working on it. He'll take threes in games. He'll make a few. But you remember a few games back when, you know, when KD just went off, right? He was lights out. He wound up with like 49. And I think Giannis in that game, Giannis had 34. He had a decent outing, but he left something to be desired, right? So what did he do in the next game? Ira, the man was relentless. Relentless in taking the back. I want to say every shot he took was in the paint. Like every single shot. He's like, look, I'm gonna get to the rim. I'm gonna get downhill. I'm gonna be belligerent with it. I am going to be aggressive. Period. Hey, maybe my shot isn't fun. And I just put up the box score. Here it is, Ira. You know how many threes he attempted in that game, in game six? Must win. You know how many threes he attempted? Just guess for him.
Zero.
Zero threes, Ira. Now, the man knows his three-point shot is a work in progress. He wound up taking six yesterday. Or a couple days ago. He wound up taking six. Made two. But in that game, in that pivotal game six, coming off that 49-point effort by KD, he said, I am getting to the rim. Period. I am going to be ultra-aggressive. Period. And so where's Ben Simmons with that same? Okay, you can't shoot. You can try to get to the rim. You know how I know he didn't try to get to the rim? He went to he 1 for 2 from the free throw line. That's how I know he didn't try to get to the rim. You know how I know he didn't try to get to the rim? 4 shots, Ira, in 36 minutes. Aside from just seeing it. But even if you didn't see it, you would know. What is he doing? I mean, what's going on? So, yes, he needs to work on his shot, but has it seeped into the confidence in his play, as his performance, his ability as an offensive player? Period. See, I said this earlier in the show. Against the majority of the league, which is who you play the majority of the time, you play the also-rans in the league the majority of the time. His game is going to flash. His all-around game is going to flash in those games. But when you get into the playoffs and you get deeper and you're playing better teams, they are going to expose your weakness. And they are exposing his weakness. So if you aspire to be a championship team, Philadelphia, I don't know how. It's like one or the other. It's either Doc Rivers, because he can't figure out the right mix, because he says what they have right now is enough to win it. Ben Simmons giving them what they need. Or it's Ben Simmons. I mean, I don't know how the two things jibe.
I think it's both, Sam. I think in the end, I think that it's both. Doc gets a lot of credit for winning the championship, which he deserves. But he also, look who he won with, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think Sam Webb could have won with them too. So I'm not trying to take too much away from Doc, but I think this team is missing the coach is going to take him over the hump, and they're missing the point. But I think that one of these two can be fixed. I'm convinced that Ben Simmons can spend the summer and get good enough. He does not have to be great at shooting the basketball. Now, his mental part of it, I don't know if the aggression can just come or not. I don't know enough about, you know, what he has looked like in the past. But you should be able to work his offense in the summer to get him good enough for that to be what they need. So maybe it's not both and it's just Doc. But I think your point guard has to be better, whether it's Simmons reshaping himself, you know, fixing his game. But I have a feeling that it might take a different guy pushing the buttons, because it just doesn't seem like he was getting teams over the hump. You know, once he left Boston, he hasn't seemed to get teams over the hump. Now, injuries may hurt him, which is always, you know, is not always his fault, but might be time to get a different voice. Well, I know he's just fresh there, but they might not be the right voice there.
Hey, I didn't like Doc Rivers when he was with the Hawks. I like Spud Webb. So that was
Wow, that short guy seemed to really think alike, Sam Webb.
I'm just saying. No, I didn't have anything against Doc Rivers. This is just the only reason why we're talking about it here is because this is epic collapse. If you aren't paying attention, then you missed. This is like, what did you say, Bryson DeChambeau's meltdown? You were talking about earlier in the show. This was that. Because he was leading when the meltdown started, right?
He made the turn in the lead, and after parring number 10, he went bogey, bogey, double bogey, a few pars, and then he was already out of it. But then he had quadruple bogey, snowman, an 8 on a par 4 before he parred the last hole. There were a lot of collapses yesterday, but that was an epic collapse. And that's kind of like losing an 18, 20-point lead. Granted, in the 18, 20-point lead that you're losing, the other team has to do things to you to win the game. And when you're blowing the other guys are playing well enough on the course, but really it's just you flat out dropping the ball on the golf course.
Yeah, and I don't know how you do that twice.
back to back.
Like, I can see losing one huge lead, but two?
Because what ends up usually happening, if you have the big lead the first time, you're up 18, you blow it, the next game you don't get the lead, you just lose the game. That's usually what happens. So what happened in the third game? After you're up 18.
26? Like, what the hell?
Like, how do you, like, I don't know how you keep building big leads and collapsing and then not, the level of inconsistency. And that's why some people will point to the coach. As you said, you point to the coach and the level of inconsistency. Other people will point to the point guard, because the point guard is going to lead the team on the floor. And that's the guy that when you win and lose down the stretch, the point guard gets a lot of attention. So those two are very much focuses to keep an eye on for Philly in the future. It's an interesting thing to watch. Because you got a point guard that can't shoot or a coach that can't seem to coach the close.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable collapse by the Philadelphia 76ers here. And this is, I think the way, not to say the series is over before it starts, but man, you got to like this draw if you're the Milwaukee Bucks. It's like.
Aren't they home court now?
It's like, oh man. Ooh. Woo. Yeah, this is a good draw for them. So
there was a call into the overnight show right before we went on the air this morning. I got in a little early than normal because I was taking my parents to the airport super early, and I think the Milwaukee fan was still drunk. But he was talking about how excited he was. Like, all of a sudden, we have the home court. Our team has the home court advantage in the finals and in the conference finals, and never saw that one coming. I said a little more coherently than he did because I'm pretty sure he was still drunk when he went on the air to say it. Yeah. It's shocking, though.
Yeah, I had to pull up the box score from the game 5 victory to remember what the fourth quarter, what they came back. The Hawks outscored the 76ers 40-19 in the fourth quarter. Like, I mean, there's nothing you could do. There's nothing you could do to stop a 40-19 onslaught. No adjustments you can make. And remember, this is after they had just squandered an 18-point lead the game prior. How do you lose that series? How do you lose that series? So, anyway, Mr. Weintraub, those are their problems. Our problem as Pistons fans is called the NBA Draft Lottery. Now, someone somewhere that's controlling these ping pong balls needs to finally fix it in favor of the Pistons. Fix it a la the New York Knicks in 1985. Fix it for the Pistons like the Orlando Magic a la 1993, right? Because what happened in those years? The New York Knickerbockers just happened to get Patrick Ewing. How does that happen, Ira? How does it happen that the New York Knicks just happened to get him? How does it happen that in 1993, the year after they draft Shaq, after the Orlando Magic draft Shaq, somehow, someway, and I think they had the lowest odds to get the number one pick that year. How did they wind up, Mr. Weintraub, getting the number one pick, drafting Chris Webber and trading them for Penny Hardaway? How does that happen? Can you explain that to me? Can you explain to me where that kind of good fortune is for our Detroit Pistons? Or just when we're supposed to, have a high pick. Just give us what we're supposed to have. Like the Cleveland Cavaliers in 2003, right? And they get the number one overall pick and they draft LeBron James. Because it's supposed to happen that way, right?
Hey, I mean, Sam, in that I wouldn't necessarily bring up that draft because, you know, you had a chance in that draft to maybe pick somebody else.
Okay, I gotcha. But that's why we deserve a do-over. See, that wasn't even the Pistons' pick. That was a pick they had traded for.
So you're saying they just didn't feel like using it well.
Hey, Joe D will never live it down.
This isn't really our pick, so we don't care if it works out. So we'll just take the Darko guy as opposed to, you know, a couple future Hall of Fame guys.
So, come on. Start those good vibes now because the draft lottery is tomorrow. So hoping like hope that the Pistons wind up.
Sam is going to have his left fingers crossed for like a day and a half. His hand's going to hurt like crazy.
Yeah, I'm not even a superstitious guy, so I'm living my superstition this time vicariously through those who are superstitious. Like I'm riding with all whether your hat back or inside out or
rally cap time.
I don't know what you do, whatever you do, start doing it now. So we have enough of it built up to get that pick right come tomorrow. We gotta get out of here, folks. We appreciate you listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050. WTK, The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.